New Zealanders want and deserve a transparent and comprehensive inquiry into the COVID-19 response, not another whitewash. That's why RCR is bringing you a special segment aimed at examining the terms of reference, as well as what the country's best and brightest minds believe should be put on the table and why. The inquiry sessions will endeavour to unpack everything we already know and all the things we still don't know about how the COVID response was handled and what needs to be included in any new inquiry so that New Zealanders can get answers, justice and a future free from government overreach. Welcome to the inquiry sessions. Welcome to another edition of the Inquiry Sessions on Reality Check Radio. My name is Alastair Harding, and our guest today on the Inquiry Sessions is British investigative journalist Sonia Elijah. Sonia has a background in economics, but she's also formerly a researcher for the BBC, and most recently, she's been sifting through Pfizer's own data, made public by Freedom of Information Act requests. And through that, she's broken the incredible stories of devastating harm to unborn children via the COVID injections, as well as bombshell data that shows that Pfizer knew their product spike proteins passed to babies both transplacentally and through breast milk. Which also means that if our government was doing their due diligence in reading Pfizer's own research, they must have known too. Sonia's been on Reality Check Radio twice already to talk about these stories, so today she's back to talk for the inquiry sessions about the role those injections have played in the current cancer epidemic that is sweeping the world, and hopefully a few other topics as well. Sonia, welcome to the inquiry sessions. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, Alistair, for having me on.
Okay, to start with, can you just give us a little rundown on your background? You're a former BBC researcher, but today you're an investigative journalist, and it seems you're making a name for yourself sifting through all the rather large pile of stories that the mainstream media just seem too busy to look at the moment.
Yes. So I began my sort of journalistic journey probably about 3 years ago, early 2021. This is when the UK was deep in lockdown and I was homeschooling the kids because obviously the schools were all closed. So I thought, well, what can I do with my time to be useful? And I was so dissatisfied with how the how COVID was being presented in the mainstream media. How we were in a world of lockdowns, how could that happen? You know, it's so unprecedented. How they could have closed schools, right? Mm. It was just so alarming. So I just decided to do my own research and dig through, do my own research. And I wrote my first piece based on school closures and then on masks and how, you know, and just looking at the data, looking what was really going on. And so my first piece was published, it was an online publication. It's called what was formerly called The Conservative Woman. It's now called TCW Defending Freedom. And I started writing a series of articles there. I also looked at the PCR test and discovered many scandals to do with the PCR test. This is the gold standard of testing, of diagnostic test to diagnose, to screen for the virus, for SARS-CoV-2. So it was just, and it's once you go through, once you sort of, it's untangling a web of lies. That's sort of where I sort of found myself doing, and I'm quite good at unpicking those lies and really diving down deep into the research and drilling down into that. One thing really led to another. So I've really covered the whole COVID story. I've really covered from different angles, the testing, the lockdowns, and of course, these gene-based shots, injections. I cannot call them vaccines because they really aren't traditional inoculate their vaccines. They don't work that way. They are gene-based, gene therapy products. Even Pfizer and BioNTech's own Security Exchange Commission filings, this is in the US, they classified their product as gene therapy. The FDA has recognized that they are gene therapy, but they were marketed and branded as vaccines purely on the basis to maximize uptake, because they knew that if they were to call them these are gene therapy products, no one would have taken them.
Another way they branded it, I seem to recall too, is that they started by calling them mRNA vaccines. So that was messenger mRNA that we were being told. But actually, it was modified mRNA. That was another way that they twisted the words a little bit, wasn't it?
Yes, and I've written on that, all about modified mRNA and how they cause... So I've interviewed Kevin McKernan. He was the R&D lead on the Human Genome Project. He's based in the US. He's a genomicist, and he was talking about how they basically, they took out one of the nucleodes, uridine, and they put M1 methyl pseudouridine as a replacement, which is purely very synthetic, and that was put in the product. And the problem with that, it causes frame shifting. This is when the ribosomes come to read the RNA transcript, and they sort of slip, and they end up different proteins end up getting translated because of this phenomenon. So you have abnormal proteins being produced. So I've written extensively on this too. So really, they say it's the vaccine or spike protein being produced. And actually, we don't know what really is being produced, because we have all these abnormal aberrant proteins coming out of this. And there's a whole host of problems when the body is being exposed to these abnormal proteins. So, I mean, it really is, it's such a shocking, you know, it's such a crime against humanity, really, what I would classify as a crime against humanity, what has gone on.
Okay, and one of the things that I've found as I've researched for this interview is that all the information that you're talking about with all of this, all the adverse effects of these products, it's actually all the manufacturer's own data, isn't it? And it's all there in plain sight for anyone if they were just to go and look and have the stomach for sitting through all of those pages and pages, thousands of pages, I would expect.
Yes. So I was one of the first journalists, this is late 2021, to go through Pfizer's data dump. So this was what happened there was, is that... a group of medical professionals decided to take the FDA, the US's drug regulator, to court because they were requesting the documents that the FDA relied on to authorize the Pfizer-BioNTech mRNA vaccine. So they were wanting to see those documents, and the FDA kept, you know, ignoring them. So they had to take them to court. And in the court process, you have the FDA coming out saying, well, no, actually, they will only be released until 2096. This is insane. They wanted to literally, and you're thinking, well, what are they hiding? If they're saying, no, we'll release them, but, you know, 70, 75 years later. And it's insane. So, the judge, thank goodness, ruled, you know, they demanded that they do produce these documents on a time schedule. So every month you were getting these sort of data dumps. And I was one of the first to look into that. This is late 2021, where I discovered the Pfizer's cumulative analysis of adverse events report. I think it was like a 40. This was actually one of the shortest documents I've read. I've read thousands. This is like it was about like 40 pages or something. But in the it was so damning because it talked about the first 3 months of the vaccine rollout. So it was from that kind of December 2020 period. That's when, you know, got authorized to start, and then through to end of February 2021. And in that 3 month period, they discovered, this is Pfizer's own data, 1,228 deaths following the shot. And it's not just months later. It's like, you know, shortly afterwards people dying, right? You have harms to the pregnancy data was really alarming. I really looked into that. And a whole host of problems. The variety, there were 8 pages of adverse events in that document, including the myocarditis, pericarditis, and all of that. So they knew all about that, right? And that they still rolled it out to younger and younger age groups. And in some countries, they mandated it, right? So I looked at that. That caused a lot of... So when that report got published for Trial Site News, this is now we're talking about December 2021, an Australian agency, I think Calkine Media, picked my report up and wanted to interview me. And they had a YouTube channel. It was on YouTube. And literally that interview of me went viral. It went in 3 days, it got 1.5 million views in about 3 day period. And then YouTube just shut it down, just, removed it. And that was my taste of about, obviously being shut, just suppressed, censored, all of that. I've just continued writing. And I've also looked at the European Medicine Agency's data. Again, this is the source is Pfizer. And these are called periodic safety update reports. And I wrote that for Children's Health Defense Europe. And I've written many reports sifting through thousands of pages of documents that were submitted to the EMA. And I focused on child deaths. I thought, well, what could be the most, what is the most shocking thing here? And it's the child deaths. These are children, these are pediatric cases classified under 17s. And then harms, like you said, to breastfeeding infants. They knew that the product would cross the placenta to the fetus and also through the breast milk. And we have a lot of scientific literature now confirming that it goes to the breast milk.
I guess we've gone a little bit longer than I expected on the introduction. We're here to talk today specifically about the cancer thing. In the past you've come on to RCR and you've talked with both Paul Brennan and Cam Slater about the effect of the gene therapy products on pregnancies and mums and babies. And I'd really like to recommend any of our listeners who are listening today that haven't heard those, please go and check those out on the Reality Check Radio replays, because those interviews are quite astonishing. And I would also say terrifying that this was done in the full knowledge. This is information that our government knew beforehand, before they signed our nation up to having these products. They knew this stuff that Sonia is talking about with Paul and with Cam. But today we're going to move on to a slightly different subject, still adverse events, but today we're going to jump into your research about one of your latest stories that you've written. It's entitled "The Princess of Wales is Truly Not Alone in Her Cancer Treatment." And this is something a lot of us are hearing about cancers, and turbo cancers especially, that cancers aren't as rare as they used to be in the old days. Is this really something to do with these injections?
Oh, I believe it is, because so this report that I wrote, so on March 22nd, that's when the Princess of Wales announced that she was in the early stages of cancer treatments. Like, very sad news. She's a young woman, a young mum. And so she wrote that she sort of signed off. Her last thing she said was, "You are not alone." And I thought, well, that's I can pick up on that, because truly she is not alone. We are not alone, because so many young people are facing cancer now these days. And it's not just in the UK. It's in many other countries too. And so what I did was I looked at 2 scientific papers, because everything I write on, Alistair, is always backed up by evidence. I would never write on conjecture or my opinion, because I don't have to, right? That the evidence speaks for itself. So I looked at 2 papers. One was focusing on the US data. So this is data sourced from the US CDC, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And we have the researchers. This is the study done by Allegria et al. And there were three researchers. I interviewed one of them, Dr. David Wiseman, and they looked at US death trends for neoplasms for the ages 15 to 44. And they delved into the cancer-related mortality from 2010 up to 2022. And they found an alarming pattern. So they saw a sizable uptick in cancer as the primary cause of death, and also its occurrence as a contributing factor to mortality across multiple cases. But what they found is that the increase in excess mortality in both 2021 and 2022, this is from neoplasms, from cancers, are highly statistically significant. And they classified it as extreme events. And they go on to write, so this I'm just quoting from the paper, which is in my report. The results indicate that from 2021, a novel phenomenon leading to increased neoplasm deaths appears to be present in individuals aged 15 to 44 in the US. And that wasn't just it. So we have that paper focusing on the US. Now, earlier in, this is early 2024, another paper came out, and two of the authors actually, same authors, two of the authors are the same. They investigated cancer rates in the UK. And in individuals aged 15 to 44, and for the UK, it showed much larger deviations from trend in 2021 and 2022. And the authors write, we show a large increase in morbidity, like these are disabilities, and mortality due to malignant neoplasms that started in 2021 and accelerated substantially in 2022. And they ended it the same. They wrote, the results indicate that from late 2021, a novel phenomenon leading to increased malignant neoplasm deaths and disabilities appears to be present in individuals aged 15 to 44 in the UK. So we have these two, I would say, cornerstone. You know, these are sort of the cornerstone here, because you have them analysing the data, seeing the trend, seeing the statistically significant uptick, 2021 and 2022. And all I do is ask the question, what was the novel phenomenon? What was introduced at that time? What was going on? It was the vaccine. It was the gene therapy-based product that rollout.
What do governments say that the answer to that question is?
Well, some people say, oh, lockdowns. I mean, there is a factor where you have lockdowns that happen. We had a lot of the hospitals turning people away, right? You know, people staying in their homes. So we have a delayed cancer diagnosis going on. That, of course, has happened. But it doesn't explain this excess that we're seeing in cancers, excess in mortality all around as well. And you can't just brush it all to the side. Oh, it's just because we had these lockdowns. There's something else going on, something else that has been introduced to the population worldwide. So this is not just in the UK. You've got US, you've got Europe, you've got Asia. I mean, so it's so alarming. And what I looked into, Alistair, is that a few months ago, I wrote a two-part piece on my Substack, Sonia Elijah Investigates, called Thou Shalt Not Adulterate. And that was based on the huge scandal of the contamination story that has gone on. And this is the underlying, I believe, the underlying causes of the cancer that we're seeing. Now, just to backtrack a bit, in early 2023, you have Kevin McKernan. So I mentioned him before. In his independent lab, he's a well-known genomicist. He was the first one to discover billions to hundreds of billions, this is the amount, of DNA, naked DNA molecules present in the vials, present in the Pfizer-BioNTech shots and the Moderna shots. These are the mRNA-based shots. And it wasn't only him. It was a bit later, we have Dr. Philip Buchholz in the US also discovering it in his lab. What they found was that you have this plasmid DNA. Plasmid DNA comes from bacteria present in the shots. But not only that, you have SV40. SV stands for simian virus, which is a virus found in monkeys. SV440 is the it's a cancer-promoting genetic sequence that was also found in this in the DNA. And the really alarming thing about SV40 is that it's used in experiments on lab animals to induce cancer. So they so the researchers, the scientists can study cancer. That was found in the shots.
Hold on.
And this has...
This cancer-inducing... Sorry, what is it? It's a particle. It's a DNA particle.
It's a genetic sequence, right, which is part of the DNA that's found in the shots. We have SV40, cancer-promoting genetic sequence found in the shots. And this is not... this should be a story that's running everywhere on the mainstream media. Of course, it's completely... No one's writing about it. Only independent journalists like myself have really gone, you know, really dug, you know, researched and written about this. And I'm going to talk a little bit about how that can then lead to cancer. So when you have, when you inject naked, like plasmid DNA, right, you have the risk of insertional mutagenesis. Now, I talked about this in my report. This can lead to the activation of oncogenes. Now, oncogenes are mutant genes that cause cancer. Or also, when you get another phenomenon happening, you get the inhibition, that means like the suppression, it prevents inhibition of tumor suppressor genes. Now, tumor suppressor genes sort of protect us from getting cancer. If those are inhibited from doing their job, that leads to an increased risk of cancer. So you have, it's like a twofold effect. This is what's going on. And just to define what insertional mutagenesis is, because obviously I'm not a scientist, I've had to do my own homework and research this. It's a phenomenon by which external, like foreign DNA sequence, integrates with the host, with the genomes, the genome of a host, like the human body. When that happens, you get insertional mutagenesis. This is when the DNA goes into the nucleus of the cell. And remember, all the regulators and all the media in the beginning were saying, oh no, the shots don't get into the nucleus of the cell. That doesn't happen. Well, it does. You get transfection. It does happen. And you're getting not only that, it's not even the modified mRNA. This is, there's free floating DNA, which is found in the vials, which they said never existed. That they, like, if you look at the ingredients, you know, when you, every government has its own, with the regulator, they have these sort of what the contents of the vials. Nowhere does it state, oh, there's DNA as an ingredient. So this has been, I mean, it's not just misbranding. It's like they're actually not disclosing what's really in these vials. Now, I wrote to the MHRA based on my my work. I wrote to the MHRA and say, because the European Medicine Agency have acknowledged this, that there is DNA. And also, I think Health Canada did. The Epoch Times, I think, broke this story. And so I wrote to the MHRA, and the letter, I mean, I put this in my article, like, well, how they wrote, what they wrote back to me. It was so alarming, because I asked, do you have any intention of, this is what's been found, do you have any intention of independently testing the vials, looking for SV40 and the DNA? And they said, no, we have no intention, and we never intend to. This is so shocking, isn't it? So this is willful blindness. They're willfully turning away, turning a blind eye to what is going on. And we have scientific literature going back from even 2004 saying you've got the risk of insertional mutagenesis. But it doesn't even end there, Alistair, because I looked at the patents. So in my report, in this two-part report that I wrote end of last year, what's really disturbing is that Moderna, in their 2019 patent for respiratory virus, for an mRNA-based vaccine for targeting a respiratory virus, they wrote, they talked about the potential problems, the risks of if you inject DNA into the human body, which is insertional mutagenesis. So they were aware of this. And also Pfizer, BioNTech, which was the, you know, the Pfizer, it's with BioNTech. They knew about it too, based on the scientific studies that they came out in the early 2000s. So they knew about this risk. It's established. So they never actually. So they just, with their own products, they've allowed it to happen. And if your listeners are asking, how did it get there? Why are we seeing billions, hundreds of billions of DNA molecules in these vials? It's because they changed the manufacturing process. So during the clinical trials, and I've written about this as well, about 2 years ago, I wrote a bombshell story. I looked at the leaked European Medicine Agency emails. So there was a hack, there was a leak. I got given these emails and I looked into it, and they were so alarming, because in the weeks, just a few weeks running up to the authorization of the Pfizer and BioNTech shots, this is like November 2020, you have all these sort of regulatory, the employees talking amongst themselves, mentioning the FDA, Health Canada, but specifically these were EMA workers, flagging up, there's a drop in integrity in the virals. There's contaminants. We're seeing contaminants. We're seeing visible particles. So alarming. And I wrote on this, and I wrote about the what they're seeing was fragmented mRNA molecules in the vials. So they were not intact. So you have basically also a risk of aberrant or abnormal proteins being produced by these sort of chopped up mRNA pieces. And I've written on that. And also they speak about, you know, process one, process two. So process one was the small batches that were made for the clinical trials that was tested on people, right? Used a different process. They had a very expensive filtration system using magnetic beads. The template was different. Now, for process two, they cut costs. This is all to cut costs and to do a mass sort of rollout, like large batches, large scale production. They used process two, which was never tested, right? This was not used on the clinical trial, in the clinical trials. This was, they used the template from bacteria. So this is DNA from plasmid DNA from bacteria. They used that as a template to get the modified mRNA. And they never properly filtered out the remaining DNA. They just didn't clean it up. They didn't filter it out. So that's why you're having the contaminant. This is the contamination story, which I think is huge. And I interviewed Joshua Gertzko, from the senior lecturer from the Hebrew University in Israel. He talked about this. This is on my podcast. And he explained this to me, and I said, well, that makes sense, because I've looked at these emails and they discuss process one, process two. There's a dip in integrity. There's a significant drop in integrity of the vials. So, and we're seeing particles. So this all sort of comes together, and this all comes to a head in this explosion of cancers we're seeing, the adverse events, not just cancer, but across the board, we're seeing very unusual adverse events.
And in your story about Princess Kate, you quote David Wiseman, one of the co-authors of the paper that you're talking about in that story. And he says, I quote, "The data remains preliminary and precise trends will only become evident after a few more years. Nonetheless, the signals should be reason for urgent investigation." What does that actually mean? Is this is going to continue? This isn't just going to stop after the first round of injections and that's it? Or are we actually expecting this to continue for many years to come?
Well, yes. I mean, this is the risk. It's like it's future cases. You know, who knows what will be coming out? Because we have no, these shots were rolled out with no not even, I would say they didn't even have short-term data. It was just like, what did they have? There's no long-term data. We don't know. Who knows what will be, what other unusual of adverse events will come out of this? How will it affect fertility, right? Because these lipid nanoparticles, this is in the biodistribution studies they did. And this came out, Japan got this out of Pfizer because it's a Japanese document that was then translated. And it was Dr. Brian Bridle, I think, in Canada that first broke that story a few years back. This is the biodistribution study. This is the how the lipid nanoparticles go into the ovaries, go into the testes, go into the brain, go into the bone marrow, go into the spleen. I can go on and on with every organ they can get into, right? And how? Who knows how long they stay there? How are they being eliminated? And we have other scientific literature saying, I think up to 6 months or a year, the vaccinal spike protein is still floating around in the body. So literally, they've turned our body's cells into factories for making this toxic vaccinal spike protein, which attacks the organs, which attacks the linings of the organs. That's why you're getting myocarditis, pericarditis, attacks the lining of the heart muscle, right? And then you have a whole host of autoimmune diseases. And I've written on this because when I looked at the, this was also in my, when I did a lot on the European Medicine Agency's, those emails and the data and those reports, you have, when it's the modified nucleotide, this is the modified mRNA. And this is not natural mRNA found in our body. This is modified. It's synthetic. You get this slippage occurring, this ribozonal frame shifting happening. You've got abnormal proteins being produced, right? And that causes the body to, it sees this abnormal foreign protein and it attacks it. So, and wherever that protein goes, it attacks the organs. So you have a host of autoimmune diseases. Now the EMA were aware of this issue because they wanted BioNTech, the sponsor, to do more safety testing on it. And I've looked into that and we know that they hadn't, you know, because it was always incomplete. They never... And the EMA, for some reason, decided to greenlight it, not chase them up, not bother. And they were aware of the autoimmune thing from this modified mRNA platform.
Okay, but are we overstating all of this? Are we reading too much into this? Because if they know all about this, then why would they still be continuing to push this stuff on the populations? I mean, they're still advertising boosters here today in New Zealand. I'm sure they're doing the same thing where you are in the UK. And I'm sure if I went to the Ministry of Health and I asked them, I'm absolutely certain that they're not going to put their hands up and say, oh, yeah, you got me. They're going to tell me it's safe and effective and all of that. It seems to me that they actually believe they're safe and effective. So... are we reading too much into all of this data?
No, because the data doesn't lie, right? I don't believe the numbers can lie. They can be manipulated for nefarious reasons, right? But this is like their own, this is the raw, you know, this is their data. This is, and you have, it's, and you know, this is on VAERS. This is the safety surveillance systems in US, VAERS, VAERS. You have explosions of adverse, you know, you have a whole, all these signals are going off. You have in the UK, you have the yellow card system where they record all the adverse, you have signals going off there. They're just being ignored. And I can't speak to intent, right? Mm-hmm. I just speak on facts. And they are being, I call it willful blindness because they are not addressing this issue. They're not monitoring it. And why are independent scientists ringing the alarm bells? Why are independent journalists doing the research ringing the alarm bells? Why aren't the regulators ringing the alarm bells? Because that's their job.
Okay, so at the moment in the UK, In New Zealand, this is still a story, but most people just want to forget about it. Most people don't want to talk about it anymore. The COVID inquiry that we're going through at the moment is basically not talked about by the mainstream media at all. Is it still a subject in the UK?
Well, I mean, to me, it's a complete whitewashing operation, the COVID inquiry. They're not asking the right questions. They're delaying. So all actually the vaccine component. Yes.
So sorry, your COVID inquiry is still going on today?
Yes, it's still going on. Yeah, because it's been the vaccine component to look at that, the inquiry for that has been pushed back to maybe after the election. They've just pushed it. They've sort of kicked it down the long road. And, you know, that's being pushed back. How convenient, right, for them to do that.
Okay. Just to finish up, do you think there will ever be any conclusion to this? Do you think we'll ever find out the truth? I mean, you're doing such great work to help us see the truth, but will humanity actually be able to come to an experience with the truth themselves? Will we ever actually see that? Will we see a proper investigation one day?
I don't know about seeing a proper investigation one day, unless it was independently funded, right? Not tied to any sort of government or government agency. Then we'll see the truth really come out. But it's sort of, I think people are starting to wake up. This is what I'd like to think, because I think the lies have been so big. They're not been small lies. They've been so huge, right? And so even if you did a little bit of independent research yourself, you would start to uncover all of that, unearth it. And so I think people are slowly waking up to that. And I encourage listeners to, again, do their own research, not rely on what the mainstream media is telling them. And I think a lot of people are being turned off by the mainstream. I think the ratings for, like, I know for the BBC and, you know, I'm sure in, you know, New Zealand, Australia, it's similar. People are turning towards, I think, more independent outlets because I think they're so sick of the lies.
Yeah, and I think social media is having a huge part to play in that, that actually this is partly because the media is actually dying and we're actually becoming the media ourselves. Anyone with a mobile phone becomes a part of the media with social media today, right? And that's what you're doing with your Substack. Could you just let our listeners know, where can they find your writing? Because it's a treasure trove of information. We need to let people know where to find that.
Yes, so they can follow me on X. This is my handle is at Sonia, S-O-N-I-A, underscore Elijah, E-L-I-J-A-H. When they go onto my profile, they'll see a Linktree link. And that Linktree link, you'll see all my work on that page, work for Trial Site News, work for the Brownstone Institute. I have my own Substack. They can find me, which is Sonia Elijah Investigates. A lot of my work gets posted on my Substack. They can find me there, read my reports from there.
Do you ever see a day when any of these stories that you've written on your Substack, and I'm just looking through the page right now as we're talking, there's a lot of stuff there. Do you ever see the day when somebody from the mainstream media calls you up and says, look, we really want to reprint your story?
I think I'd be laughing, actually, when I'd be like, what, oh, really? Wouldn't that be a good day, right? Wouldn't that be a good day when you actually... It really gets exposed. That would be a brilliant day. I mean, I'm currently writing a book because I really want to encapsulate all my work, sort of, you know, all of the 3 years of work and investigations into a book. So that hopefully will hopefully be finished soon and be coming out soon. And I will let you know when that happens. But you know, it's sort of a book is great because you can, you know, I like, you know, you read it, you can give it to a friend. It's all sort of in one place. And that's what I want. And I like writing in layman's terms because a lot of the scientific literature, it's so hard to process, right? And to really, what does that mean? What does that, you know? So I try and just write quite simply and for everyone to understand and just get, you know, getting the truth out. And, because it's been buried for so long and it needs to come out. And I always believe that truth prevails in the end. And I am an optimist.
And we are too, especially after listening to everything that you've been able to tell us about today. Thank you so much for your time. And thank you so much for all this effort. That would be an incredible amount of work going through all of that mind-numbingly, deliberately boring Pfizer information, no doubt. So thank you so much for your work, Sonia.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Alistair. Thank you for, you know, allowing me to talk about it.
The RCR Inquiry Sessions. Unpacking the COVID response for an honest inquiry.